Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Send Mum Club podcast. I'm your host, Gemma, and thank you for listening. Hi to you if it's your first time listening, or hi to you if you're a regular listener. I think we've had enough episodes now to say that there are regulars, and I love that. Thank you so much. So if you are a first time listener to this podcast, then it is a parenting podcast with a difference. This podcast is all about send mums. I'd love to know if there are some dads listening, but yeah, obviously mainly aimed at the mums because that's what I am. I am a mum of three. So I have two older children, Alfie and Millie. My daughter is 12. My son has just turned 17, which is wild and is blowing my mind that I have a 17-year-old. But, you know, that wasn't enough. So me and my husband decided to start again and we have baby Leo, who isn't really a baby anymore. He's 2.5, but because he's the youngest, he will always be baby Leo. And I quite like that. Now, Leo has Down syndrome, and that was the reason for me wanting to start this podcast, because when we first got that diagnosis, the feelings that we had, grief, fear, anger, sadness, were overwhelming. And once the dust had settled a little bit, I was looking for support and community and people who were going through something similar to what we're going through. Because I think when you get that initial diagnosis, whatever it is, it can feel a really lonely place, and you can feel like it's just you and you don't know anyone else in a similar situation. And that's what I hope that this podcast is somewhere that you can come and hear people talking about maybe something completely different to what your child is experiencing and what your family is going through. But a lot of the emotions will be the same, even if the day-to-day life isn't the same. So my guest this week is somebody that I stalked on Instagram and asked if she would come on the podcast. And thankfully, she said yes. So her name is Kim, and she is talking about her daughter, Jessica, who has a stoma bag. Now, this chat was great for me when we recorded, because I actually learned quite a lot. And that's another thing that I want this podcast to be, is educating and informing and raising awareness of things that even as Send parents, you might not have considered, or you might not really have any knowledge of, because you just haven't needed to before. We talk about Jessica's journey to getting her stoma bag, what led to that operation, and how life has been since. And it wasn't necessarily what Kim thought it would look like, as has been the case with a few of my guests, I have to say. We talk about changes that need to be made logistically to disabled access, specifically around toilets, because obviously this is a bowel condition. We spoke about Jessica's EHCP being declined and what the next steps are and what that means for her as she's heading into high school, and also how Kim deals with Jessica's medical anxiety. And that's something that we haven't spoken about before, but I think is something that a lot of Send children will be dealing with, and as their parents, then how do you deal with that? So that's a really interesting part of this chat. I hope you enjoy it. I certainly did. Let's get into it. Hi, Kim. Thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
You're welcome.
Now, you are here to talk about your daughter, Jessica. So can we just start by you just telling me a little bit about her?
Yeah, Jessica's 10, such a bubbly, outgoing little girl. But she was born with chronic bowel problems from the minute she was born. Obviously, that was a struggle. We didn't get any answers, and she was just going through so much pain and stuff. But she's obviously 10 years down the line, she's just still smiling, still happy, and still going strong.
Now, you've set up an Instagram page for her, which is basically how I found you, slid into your DMs. And I was like, please come on the podcast. I'd love to talk to you, which we'll get onto that in a bit. But let's just go back to the beginning, if you don't mind. Did you know immediately, or when was it that you found out that she had bowel problems?
Well, when she was born, obviously I've got a son who's older than Jessica, so he was 6 years older than her. So I knew that babies are meant to pass meconium within the first 24 hours.
Yeah.
But Jessica never. So we were sent home. She was 2.5 weeks early, so I thought, oh, it might be that. So we came home and she still hadn't passed it. So I spoke to the midwife when she come round, I think it was day two, and I said, listen, she still hasn't passed that meconium. So they actually checked. She said, this is going to sound strange. She said, but we do get babies that are born that the bum hasn't before, you know, there type of thing.
Yeah.
So they checked and they said, no, she has, you know, everything's okay and things like that. And I think it was about 48 to 72 hours that she actually passed the meconium then, but she was in significant pain just passing that. And then it was from then, she was just chronically constipated from birth. She was in so much pain. She just, you know, 10 days old, she was having an enema. Yeah, it was heartbreaking for her. When she had the enema, we had to go to Ormskirk Hospital because that's where they give birth. And so we went there and they give her that. They give her some to bring home. We had to carry on. And I was like, this isn't right, surely to God. So we went to the doctors and they said, no, it's not right. So they sent her to, I think, back to Ormskirk because that's where we went. But she was too complex for them. So okay. They sent her to Alderhay and they performed a biopsy. She was awake, but it was like a rectal biopsy to check for something called Hirschsprung's disease, which is a condition where it can link to them not being able to pass meconium and stuff. But that was negative, which was good news in our case. But things just didn't get better. And she was still, they were like, oh, you know, maybe when she weaned. So we did wean her a little bit earlier then. I think it's 6 months. We weaned at 4 months.
Oh, so you've got this far with no answers?
No. She was given like Gaviscon, you know, because she had reflux. She was given lactulose, but that really hurt her stomach. So in them first 4 months, she was on all this medication and nothing seemed to help. So we were back to square one.
At this point, how were you feeling? Because I think sometimes getting no answers can be more difficult than getting an answer, because obviously you've said that she's in pain, she's taking all these things, she's obviously tiny and it's not working. How were you feeling at this point?
It was heartbreaking for us because you've got this baby, you know, really young baby, crying all the time, in significant pain, the tummy's all distended, and you're like, how can I help her? And there was just nothing we could do. We had to just try and, you know, massage your tummy, doing all them techniques for a child with constipation. But it was tearing her as well. So she ends up with chronic fissures, which are like, in how I describe it, like little paper cuts and things like that. But it felt like you don't get listened to. It's a point of, well, it could be what, you know, what they're eating. She never, ever got any allergy testing, you know, for the milk or anything like that. So again, we're like, well, shouldn't you be doing these things? But they never. So we were just left with medication. So then we weaned her and she went from like chronically constipated to like a loose, you know, like a loose substance. And again, that isn't normal, you know. And she was back at the hospital. They said, we will discharge her, see how she goes. Within a couple of months, I was back at the doctor's. I was like, she's back to being constipated really bad. They referred her back, and that's when I think she was about two then, so we were back and forth, and then they took her to theatre because she had chronic fissures, and they did like manual evacuations, and they gave us something called irrigation, so it's like a bowel washout. She was on them, which was horrific, you know. She used to scream. It's not very nice for the child to have to do.
No, not at all. And not nice for you to have to watch either.
No. And perform, because us as parents, like anybody in the bowel community will know, when they've got little children and you've got to administer enemas, you've got to do bowel washouts, it's children fight you off, you know, especially being so young. They don't want that done. And an adult wouldn't like it. So you can imagine how heartbreaking it was seeing Jessica really upset, because even though she was having this to help her, it was still causing significant pain.
And how did you get your head around that? Because, I mean, every parent of any kind of child has been there in a situation where they're having to have a blood test, or they're having to have something done, or even a temperature check, and you have to kind of squish them in. And even something as minor as that doesn't feel nice.
No.
So, I mean, this is next level, isn't it?
It is, because you do have to kind of, I wouldn't say restrain them, Well, in a way, yeah.
Well, because you do, don't you?
You do, yeah. You do. And you have to hold them. So, like, obviously, my partner, he was a really massive help. If I was on my own, if I was a single parent, I wouldn't have been able to do that on my own, you know, because, as said, little children, the age of two, they can fight you off and,
They're strong.
Yeah, they are strong. And Jessica is one strong little girl. So, yeah, it's quite difficult.
What happened after that?
We did get told about a stoma at the age of two, but we decided to go with the bowel irrigation, which is like a water and you've got to administer it through like a pump thing. So we tried that and it was successful at first. Didn't cure the chronic constipation, but obviously it helped relieve, you know, bring the stool out. So we did that, and but then it started to become not effective. Like a lot of medications, they can become not effective.
Yeah.
So what we did then was they give us an extension tube that was for the water to go up her bowel even further. And again, that wasn't effective. So the next steps was a stoma.
I'm aware of what this is. One of my best friends has got one, actually. But for people listening who don't know exactly what a stoma is, can you just explain?
Yeah. So there is different types of stomas. You get a colostomy. That's what Jessica's got. So that is where the large bowel is diverted to outside the stomach and the where the stoma bag to collect any feces. This is to help not the stool not go down the rectum way.
Was that a decision that you still had to make at this point? That wasn't something, or was it something that you were told this is the only option?
It was the last option. We had tried everything. So it was the last resort. That's why we tried the irrigation first to see if that would help. It was only meant to be for a year. She was only meant to have it for a year. Now she is coming up to 7 years this year with having the stoma.
Is that something that there's still an option to reverse at some point, or is that now something that's permanent?
We hope one day. But if you ask Jessica, she's keeping Apple forever because that's what she named it, Apple. So I think she's that used to it. But I do hope one day that, you know, there might be, we just don't know. Because even now with her stoma, her rectum, she gets a lot of pain and inflammation. So it's called something called diversion colitis, in which apparently it is when the bowel is diverted, the rectum can get all this inflammation. But the pain side of this, Jessica had before she had the stoma. So it's like anything that's in there, it could be stool, could be mucus, could be anything, causes significant pain. So we don't know what the future will hold for Jessica.
How does that make you feel? Like, you've obviously said currently she's fine. Like, you know, she's like, well, this is, you know, just life and I want to keep it. How do you feel not knowing how that's going to pan out?
I think it's hard because, you know, when they get to an age, like adult age, you know, you're not their advocate no more. So, and with Jessica, especially with having autism and ADHD, you don't know as a parent how they are going to feel in that sense of they have to speak for themselves and make decisions for themselves. But we do guide Jessica along them ways to know that she's got to make them decisions.
Have you actually got or did you get before the operation an actual diagnosis of why this was happening?
No. All they said, it's called idiopathic chronic constipation. So Jessica did go to Great Ormond Street for some manometry testing of the bowel. But again, no answers, nothing.
How do you deal with that? Because I think I would find that incredibly frustrating, not knowing why.
Yeah, all we get told is this can happen to some children, but obviously being in the bowel community, there's a lot of children and still no answers. So, but this, as we say, there's got to be an answer. But as, like, you know, professionals say, it might be when she's a teenager, you know, the body's more developed, you might get answers then.
You've mentioned the bowel community a couple of times. How important is that to you?
When we found out Jessica was getting her stoma, there was like a group on Facebook called the Breakaway Foundation, and it was just about bowels. And I went on that and I got a lot of information. But that's what led Jessica to wanting to do her own social media, which is run by myself, of course. And it just opened you up to more parents and you gain friendships. Like, we have got some amazing friendships with people who are going through similar journeys. And obviously you would have seen on Jessica's socials, one of them in particular is little Jax, who they live 120 miles away from us. And they bond, not just our families bond together, but the children bond, you know, having that friendship in children who know they're like me. It shows that they're not going through it alone as well.
And how does Jessica feel at the minute having the stoma? How did she deal with it to start with? Like, you know, going back to that surgery, because it's a big surgery to have that, isn't it? It's not a minor operation, having a stoma. So how did her and you feel going into that, knowing, I guess, that it was the last resort?
Well, me and her dad, we were heartbroken, like couldn't sleep for like days and days before. Jessica, she had just turned 4. So she knew, but she was like, I just want this pain to go. Just before she went in for the op, we said, you can name it. And she named it Apple. And she was like, is Apple here now? And I was like, yeah. And she looked at it straight away. And she took amazing to it. She was even, like, once she was up and about, she was dancing, saying, I don't have to poo out my bum anymore, you know, because she associated, because she had all that pain. And she was like, I've got a little video of her dancing in the hospital room, wiggling a bum, saying, I don't have to poo out my bum anymore. And I was like, oh. So just seeing after the surgery, it was like a massive weight lifted off our shoulders. Like, she was just happy. And she was back to school 3.5 weeks later, and she took her buttony beard in, and, you know, she was made up with a little beard because he had a stoma as well. And, you know, she was only in nursery in the school she's in now. So, yeah, everybody just was really good with it, even the staff and the teachers, because they've got to be trained. And that's one thing I was like, what if they don't want to be trained to change her bag? But loads of them put the name forward to be trained, which was good.
That's really nice to hear. And has that positive experience continued as she's gone into actual primary school?
So it's the same school. So it's only a small school. So there's only one class per year. But yeah, so her school, absolutely, they go above and beyond, you know. There's over 10 members, maybe about 30 members of staff who are actually trained to change her stoma. They raise awareness on Stoma Awareness Day. And the whole school joins in, they all wear purple, you know, and they understand. And I think that's the biggest thing about a school, having a school that understands when the child's not feeling very well and things like that as well. You know, they know when she's not right.
Can I ask, and I hope if you don't want to talk about this, then that's fine, because I know a lot of parents struggle, as I do, in terms of looking too far into the future. So if you don't want to talk about this, that's absolutely fine. I completely understand.
Yeah.
Jessica's 10 and a half at the minute.
Yeah.
She's coming up to a difficult age to be a girl, isn't she? You know,
100%.
She's obviously at some point approaching puberty. She's going to be going to high school, which is a massive leap anyway, without anything extra going on. Talk to me about how you feel about her making that leap to high school and, you know, what that's going to mean and how things could potentially change.
I'm glad you've asked that, actually, because, and I know a lot of parents out there will be the same. I'm scared for her going to high school because she's going from such a small school into a massive school. We don't know if she'll have her friends in the school. You just don't know. Going to a school where no members of staff, nothing, no, of her needs, and with being neurodiverse as well, that can have a massive impact on transition, plus having the health needs on top of that. It's scary, you know. She's excited, don't get me wrong, she can't wait to get to high school, but as said, we don't know how she's going to cope.
You've got an older child, so you've been through this transition. I think for a typical child without any needs. It's a huge transition anyway. Yeah. It's a, and actually both of my older children were the same as Jessica. They went to a one form entry school, which when your child goes into primary school is lovely. It's a really beautiful environment. Yeah. You know, all the teachers know all of the kids. And I really loved that when they were small going into school. But actually, when they get to year six, you go, oh God, this isn't really setting them up to go to this huge, because all the high schools are huge, aren't they? You know, most of them have got multiple buildings. It's different because they aren't staying in the same classroom. Everything is different anyway. But then obviously with these extra needs on top, that's a whole different ball game then, isn't it?
It is. So Jessica doesn't cope well. She finds it very hard. It's took her 7 years to trust the teachers in her school. What we've built up in primary school could all be undone going to senior school.
Yeah.
And obviously we've gone from the HCP for it, and it's just been declined on that school can meet her needs via teacher quality or something along them lines. So I am obviously going to mediation because I think Jessica needs that legal plan. Obviously, it is all down to the educational psychologist, because that is basically what the EHCP ends up being, is what they've written. I felt like Jessica wasn't properly assessed because there's things in there like they didn't really mention about like the ADHD and the autism, because Jessica is a typical masker.
And that's quite typical in girls, isn't it?
100%. And I think that's what happens. We're going to go to mediation and we're going to try and fight it to see if she gets the support that she rightly deserves, to be honest with you.
How do you think, in terms of body image, she is going to cope? Because at the moment, she is, I mean, even when they're teenagers, they're still children, but it is a different, most children, my daughter's 12, at 10 and a half, they're looking at their body in a different way than they do when they're teenagers and going through puberty. What are your thoughts when you think about that?
So at the minute, obviously, Jessica loves her belly tops. She's not bothered. She shows her bag. She loves showing her bag at the minute. Again, the body is going to change. Jessica's style is going to change. We don't know. You know, she might want to wear like long tops. She might not want to show her belly. That is absolutely fine. It's her body. It's how she, like, she's got her own style at the minute anyway. So it is all about what she feels comfortable in.
There's some amazing women on Instagram, aren't there? Yeah. You know, you worry about your children with social media. But the flip side of it is there are people out there. I mean, I follow some of them. Louise Thompson is obviously a great example of somebody who is now like proudly showing off her bag very publicly, which I think people doing that and people who are public figures already, that must feel good.
It does. Like Jessica is a massive fan of Adele Roberts.
Yeah, and she's another great one.
Yeah, Jessica met her. She actually invited Jessica to Dancing on Ice. Ah. So she got to meet her and Jessica was absolutely made up. And Jessica does look up to Adele. So like when she's posting on social, Jessica will go, show me. And, you know, I think that's how Jessica got a lot of confidence as well, seeing Adele. And seeing what she does, like, you know, these marathons, Jessica loves running. She loves being dead sporty. So I think for Jessica, Adele is a massive inspiration to her. And, you know, you have got, I said, like Louise Thompson and things like that. Again, she is, you know, she proudly shows off her bag and stuff. And it is really nice for the younger generation to see that there is adults out there and they're still getting on with their lives.
Both of you really are huge advocates for stoma awareness, aren't you, with the Instagram. Yeah. Can I ask why? What was the thought process behind setting that up?
It was Jessica. So Jessica has always been this sassy little girl. So like she loved getting her bag out even when she was just four. And she was like, Mum, can I make my own blog? That's what she called it. And I was like, what? She was like, on YouTube. And I was like, no, I'm not going on YouTube. But because we were starting to do the fundraising for the Bare Name Buttony, we did it on my Facebook. So then we ended up making a Facebook page for Jessica, run by myself, and then Instagram and Twitter. And then it literally just spiraled, and she got obviously thousands of followers. And, you know, we used a lot of it for the fundraising side, but obviously now a lot of awareness side and speaking to other parents and things like that.
And what was the buildings lit up in Liverpool?
I think we were in town one day, it was a few years ago, about 3 years ago, and we seen the buildings lit up, and Jessica was like, do you think they'll light up purple for Stomers? And I went, ask. You know, it's all you can do is ask. So we asked, and we had the Radio City Tower first and the Mersey Gateway Bridge. Then the year after, it was the Lava building, and then, and the others again. But then this year just gone. That was huge because we had this big event set up, fundraising in town in the day. We had an event for all ostomates to come down, and they did. They travelled from London and everywhere to it. And we had the Lava buildings lit up. We had St George's Hall, the Cunard building. Everything was lit up purple.
That must make you feel incredibly proud.
Yeah, it does. More so for Jessica because it was her idea. I think bringing the ostomates together said we had some elderly people there as well who had travelled from like the other end of the country because they'd never met anybody with a stoma before. So we had from young children from the age of 3 all the way up to in the 80s that came to this event, and it was amazing. It was talked about for ages because they all loved just being together and sharing stories and stuff, and then seeing the iconic buildings lit up was just like the icing on the cake. It's like Liverpool One. Jessica asked them about the toilets, you know, being stoma friendly, and they emailed me about 2 weeks ago, and they're going to make them stoma friendly in Liverpool One.
So for people who aren't based in Liverpool, that's like the big shopping centre in Liverpool. What does stoma friendly look like?
So in the toilet, it's a long mirror, a shelf and a hook and a bin. So it's like safe.
In the cubicle?
Yes. So in the disabled toilet. So that would give like the likes of Jessica, she'll go into the toilet. She's got the long mirror so she can stand there. She can place her bag with all her supplies in, like on the little hook or on, and then place them on the shelf and then the bins there. So she's content doing her own bag without any, hopefully, accidents.
I'm not expecting you to know an exact percentage here, by the way, but just roughly, what percentage of disabled toilets in your experience have those things in them?
Not many. I know Liverpool, none of them have got all of them in there in the toilet. So yeah, I haven't really come across one yet.
It's a shame that, because obviously the whole idea of a disabled toilet is accessibility.
Yeah.
But that obviously doesn't include everybody, which defeats the point a little bit.
I know, exactly. And just these little, as I said, like a hook, it's nothing, doesn't cost too much. Even one, the sticky ones you could stick on, you know, the wall with the, it, just them little minor changes can help a person massively. Because people don't realise how many people actually have a stoma. So they're going into these toilets and, you know, they could have the right set out for them to comfortably be able to change their bag.
Yeah, I mean, it's invisible disabilities, isn't it?
Yes, that's what a lot of people don't understand.
I'd love it, you know, if somebody was listening to this and facilitated somehow that change, you know, in their workplace or their local, I don't know, leisure centre or something. It would be nice to know that you saying that, because that's something that I would never have thought of. And like I said, my friend has a stoma and I didn't know that he needed those things in a disabled toilet. I knew he needed access to it, but I didn't know what things would make it easier for him once he was in there.
The reason for the mirror and stuff is like, it's when the whole bag needs to come off and be changed. Obviously, people live with an ileostomy and they have to drain their bag, do you know, in the toilet. But if for any instance their bag leaked, they would need to actively change the whole bag. Like, that's what Jessica has to do. Every bag change, it's a new bag, like, on. So old bag off, new bag on. So as I said, Jessica's 10 and a half now. It's going to come to a time where she's going to be going out with her friends, you know. She's going to have to carry her own supplies with her. If she goes into town shopping, it for me, it would be good to know that she's got access to the disabled trolley and she can comfortably do her own bag in them toilets, because she's said she'll be with her friends and stuff, so she'll need to have things like that. I don't want her not to go out because there's not facilities there to help her.
You'd mentioned to me in a message prior to us recording that Jessica has medical anxiety around a few things. Would you just tell us a little bit about that? Because I think there will be a lot of children, you know, who have that, who have conditions, and then it then leads to that, which is obviously then going to make everything harder, isn't it?
It is. So with Jessica, she doesn't trust doctors. She doesn't. And I do get to a degree why, because sometimes she's been in theatre, she's come out of theatre in significant pain. So that, again, she's linked them two together. Blood tests, she doesn't like needles. She doesn't like medication. She doesn't like the taste of it. She doesn't like the smell of it. Some medications taste like pre-med, so she doesn't like pre-med. So there's a lot of links to why, and they all overlap. But one of the things, big things, is bloods, which I get a lot of children don't like bloods. But obviously, I did see your post on Instagram.
So for anyone who hasn't seen, I don't know if other hospitals are doing this, but our local hospital, I count myself very lucky to be able to say this is our local hospital, is Alder Hey. And they have, I don't know whether it's a trial or whether it's going to continue, but they have started doing blood tests in the community. So they're sending out community nurses to do the blood tests. And I am aware, by the way, I will caveat this by saying that I know that some families wouldn't like this. I know that some families like to have their home as a sanctuary away from those medical things. But Alder Hey have started doing something where if you consent to it, they will come to your house to take the bloods instead, which for us, my daughter has hypothyroidism, which is completely manageable with medication. So it's not an issue. But she gets really freaked out having to have blood. She only has to have them every 6 months. And I have to say, with her, we had her first blood test at home the other month. It was Leo's that has just been done. And the difference was incredible. Like she didn't love it, but it was the first time in years that she hasn't cried and become quite distressed. And that's clearly because she's in her own environment and she feels more comfortable.
Yeah, that's what Jessica is, one of the Senko. They went to a local offer, do you know, where they have all like Alder Hey and that thing. And they picked up a leaflet about that, thinking it might be a good idea for Jessica.
Yeah.
But I've recently found out that they can actually go to schools. I did speak to Jessica about this and she was like, no, because I don't want to hear my friends to hear me all scream, you know, because she knows she'll scream. So she is working with the learning disability nurses now to see if they can do it. But doctors, she'll go into the doctor's room and won't speak. But we had an incident where she's got a one-page profile and a hospital passport, and on them, is like you write all your fears down, do you know, like what you like, what you don't like. And then the consultants can read that before the patient enters the room.
Yeah.
So they can, like, one of Jessica's triggers is bloods and going to theatre. So they shouldn't talk about that in front of Jessica then.
Okay.
You know, which is really good. And it's a good way of, you know, helping children. But obviously our last one didn't go down well, and theatre was mentioned in front of Jessica and she broke down. She was telling them she hated them and everything. And I get it, because that shouldn't have been mentioned in front of her. But hopefully next time they'll learn from that and not mention it in front of it again.
How do you deal with the blood tests then? Because no one likes needles.
No.
As an adult, it's not very nice to have a blood test, but that's one of those things where we've talked obviously about restraining and, you know, having to, there's just certain times, unfortunately, where you do have to do that as a parent. Yeah. You have to hold them still so that things can be done. But the bloods is a tricky one because you have to be very, very still for that.
Yeah, you do. And do you know what? In Jessica's defence, but she wouldn't say the same. So when she's actually in the chair and about to have the blood test. She's okay. She's still crying, but she's calm. She's still. It's that build up.
Yeah.
It's that initial build up. And we just need to kind of tackle that. She's working with clinical health psychology and all the hate on that. But Jessica doesn't like to hear something. She will switch off or she'll just go. She'll be like, I don't want to hear it. I'm off. So we need to get her to listen, to be fair, just to try and work on her. But again, anything medical, she doesn't want to know. Maybe around Jessica's age now or 12, if the child doesn't want something done, they can't. Medical professionals can't make them.
Yeah, they have to consent, don't they?
Exactly. So if Jessica needs a blood test when she's that age, like, well, even now she's refusing and they can't make her. So I'm thinking, well, if she needs something done, but she's got all this medical anxiety, she's going to refuse. So
yeah,
she's got to have a lot of work done to kind of gain that trust.
It's good that there is things in place, though, to support you through that.
Yeah, it is. As I said, she's got a psychologist and things like that. So they are good. And hopefully a lot of work will be done with that.
Thank you for talking about that, though, because I think that's going to be something that's so common in children who have medical needs.
Yeah.
That they are going to feel anxious because they've had something before and they didn't feel good afterwards. You know, you're never going to be rushing to go back, are you?
No, definitely not.
We finish the podcast with the same two questions every week. So the first one is, what is the best advice that you've been given along the way about, you know, about anything we've discussed?
Just make sure you're the voice of your child. You know your child best, you know, and don't stop until you've got the right, you know, care for your children.
And then what do you wish you'd known when you got, well, normally my question is, the initial diagnosis, but I think for you, I'd like to ask you, what do you wish you'd known before you went into, or before Jessica went into that stoma surgery? Because that must have been terrifying. It's a big op, you know, your daughter's very young.
Yeah.
And that must have been really hard. Is there anything that you wish you'd have known then that you know now?
Yeah, one of the things I wish I'd known, because we got told she'd be pain-free, one of the things I wish I'd known, which we do tell other parents now, is that it's not there to cure. The child can still, you know, get pain and they can still get constipated and things like that. But we were believed to have, you know, she was going to be pain-free and she wasn't.
How was that to accept that? Because if you're thinking, right, this is the last resort, however, I'm assuming what you were thinking is, this is going to fix everything.
Yeah. It was about a month and a half after she had the surgery. She was just in really significant pain in the rectum. And it took us right back to before she had the surgery. And I was like, we're back at square one. And I said, she's had this chronic pain throughout the last 7 years. And apparently Jessica's got to learn to live with it. And I watched Jessica now and think, I couldn't live with that, like as an adult, you know, never mind a child. But God love her, you know, she hates medication. So she's like, I need pain relief. She goes, because I've got niggles, and she calls them niggles. They're the pains. So we've told her, if you take the pain meds as the pain starts, it shouldn't get bad. So she's only now just learning to accept that.
Kim, thank you so much for coming on.
You're welcome.
Telling your story and Jessica's story. I really appreciate it.
Oh, no, you're welcome.
I really enjoyed chatting to Kim then. I've just realised afterwards, though, that I forgot to ask her what all the social media handles were. So don't worry, I will put all of them in the show notes and you'll be able to see what Kim and Jessica are on Instagram, on the podcast Instagram, which if you aren't following is at the Send Mum Club. But yeah, I think that was a really interesting episode for me because I actually learnt quite a lot in that. I had no idea that disabled toilets didn't necessarily have everything that somebody who needs to use them could need. And that feels like such a shame. But I love the fact that Kim is kind of campaigning, you know, certainly locally in Liverpool, for that to change. And she told me after we finished recording that actually, if Liverpool, she's contacted both of the main shopping centres here, and she said that if Liverpool make those changes as a city, it will be the first city to make a significant amount of toilets stoma friendly. She did say that stadiums are really good at that. It is definitely something though that you'd hope that somebody who is in need of the disabled toilet for whatever reason, when they get in there, there are things that they need. And that is going to make a difference to Jessica as she gets older and she's taking more responsibility for doing those things herself. So I love that Kim's doing that. I love all the advocacy that her and Jessica are doing. And yeah, I just really enjoyed that episode. I hope you did too. And if you are enjoying the podcast in general, you know, I'd love some feedback. I would love you to DM me. I've had loads of you getting into the DMs at the Send Mum Club on Instagram. I'm not a TikToker, sorry. So it is just the Instagram. But I'd love some feedback. I'd love you to get in touch with any guest suggestions or any topics that you would like discussed. I love hearing from you. And as always, if you could rate and review on your podcast app, that would be amazing. And it will help other people to find the podcast as well. So thank you again for listening, and I'll see you back next week.